And this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. I really apologize for starting late today. The previous show ran over. For those of you who are used to listening to my regular show, The Turning Point, at Thursdays at 1 p.m., obviously Occupied Territory is on now, our program devoted, PRN's program devoted to the Occupy movement. We're Occupied Territory is on at 1 p.m. on Thursdays. The Turning Point has been moved to Mondays at 4 p.m. Soon, I will come in and record a promo, which we'll be playing on here, and we'll find out about it. You can also check the website for where there's been a lot of changes, a lot of scheduling changes on PRN, a lot of new shows added, shows moved around. So check the website for changes. Once again, I'd like to remind you, as I do every week, but I really like you to pitch in with this to get it built up even more than it is now, is our Facebook page. Occupied Territory has a Facebook page. Just Google Facebook and Occupied Territory, Facebook and Occupied Territory. Feel free to post any personal experiences you had from wherever you are in an Occupy action. If you saw if you have a video that you've seen, or if you have an essay you want to write or any kind of piece, just feel free to post it on there. The shows are posted, and you can respond to things. I frequently put posts on there. Today we have a guest, Karanja Gashusha. Karanja Gashusha is with us. He's been holding on for a while. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. You're very low. I don't hear you very clearly, though.
Is that right? We'll try to... I don't know. I can't really talk much louder than that, but you're on a cell phone, I guess, right? So.
Correct, I am.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you can't hear me, ask me to repeat myself, and I'll give it a try, because this is about as loud as it can get. People are aware of the fact that for the 6th anniversary of Occupy Wall Street, people went back to Zuccotti Square this past Saturday night, and the police reacted with extraordinary brutality, unnecessary brutality as usual. And then the next day, people moved over to Union Square, and some people have been going over to Union Square in New York, which for people who aren't in New York, it's not so far away, but far enough. It's about a mile and a half, almost 2 miles away from where Zuccotti Park, where Occupy Wall Street was, and where the demonstration on Saturday night was. So were you there on Saturday night, this past Saturday night?
Yes, I was there Saturday night. It was a big day for us, of course. So it was a celebratory mood and really very somewhat lighthearted. So it was somewhat surprising that the police reacted, I suppose, shocking, although not surprising, that the police reacted as with such force and brutality as they did. We have come to expect it.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the last, obviously, since you added that, it shouldn't have been. Obviously, it's not shocking when the police are going to react with brutality, especially in Zuccotti Park. But I guess it is surprising that, so in the end, it's not, finally, what's a sad fact of life is they don't really seem to care what the world thinks about what they do, right?
Well, clearly not. They are confident that they'll get away with it, and they're confident that there are no consequences, because if they felt that there would be consequences, then they certainly wouldn't react that way. But then again, when you really look at recent events, I mean, we have a police force that is really acting as if they are above the law, and not just here in New York. When you look at the Trayvon Martin incident, for example, mm-hmm. in Florida, where the police basically withheld his body and all evidence for 3 days before even calling his parents to let them know that their son was dead. As shocking as these events are, I suppose they're becoming less and less surprising at every turn, because clearly we have a police force that is just as seemingly as tone-deaf as the 1% in the top corporations and on Wall Street and
our
government cronies.
The police department is going to react the way that the commissioner tells them, and the commissioner is going to react the way that the mayor tells them. And obviously the mayor is wholeheartedly, I mean, talk about 1%. He is the 1/100th of the 1%. He's the 12th richest man in the United States and the 20th richest man in the world. the mayor the other day, there was some people may be familiar with the fact that an employee of Goldman Sachs put a big op-ed piece in the New York Times talking about what a toxic atmosphere it was there. He was shocked to discover this after all his time there. And anyhow, the mayor, Mr. Bloomberg, and everybody knows about Goldman Sachs, the giant vampire squid, as Matt Taibbi calls them. The Goldman Sachs actually works with the New York City Police Department, as difficult as it is to believe that it's true. They work at a federally funded surveillance, couple of floors in an office building down near Zuccotti Park. They work on surveillance of lower Manhattan and of the Occupy movement alongside the New York City Police Department, Goldman Sachs. So this is the way things have gone. The mayor felt it was necessary to go down to Goldman Sachs and to cheer them up, because he said they were a fine company. Of course, he gets millions, tens of millions of dollars from Goldman Sachs every year in income because his Bloomberg stock ticker machines are installed there. The other day, the mayor said, this is after the brutality there, the mayor said he called Goldman Sachs a great firm. He said that the former staffer who decided that the atmosphere was toxic was wrong. Greg Smith was wrong. And he said, when you work for a company, you should be loyal to them and you should never do that to them. It's a great firm. So if the mayor is standing wholeheartedly behind this, the mayor is the one who's behind all this stuff. And in other police forces all over the country, as we've learned, they take a lot of money from Homeland Security, which is why they're so beefed up and they're so military. Then a lot of the people went over to, let me ask you one question about Saturday night. The one rule that they had, not that they need to pay any attention to the rules, was that nobody could set up a tent. Did anybody try to set up a tent on Saturday?
Absolutely not. There were no tents. And clearly, as you clearly illustrate in that example, it is no surprise that, you know, we have a mayor that's right in bed with the corporations. And so none of this is surprising. It is fully tactics, that it was completely uncalled for. There was absolutely no reason. Even the few ordinances that they have put in place to try and prevent any sort of collective action to really bring to light the abuses of the 1% were not even contravened. So they do so, as you rightly point out, without any need for excuse. They have no they behave pretty much as over there above the law. And of course, there was the widely televised incident of Cecily, who was attacked and left lying there in a while having a seizure, which is just preposterous. You know, even in the war zone, that doesn't happen. You know, people get help, or medical help, when it's needed.
Yeah, there are numerous reports about this, but a woman named Cecily, do I have a last name here? It might be McMillan, but I'm not really sure. She had a seizure after being grabbed by the cops. They say they had a video of her elbowing the police, which, you know, if you believe the police anymore, then you believe in Santa Claus. But she had a seizure. Obviously, she probably has a condition or something. And the police surrounded her and let her lie on the concrete ground near a curb in a seizure. And anybody who's ever seen one of those things knows that somebody can really damage and actually kill themselves in a situation like that. And did not permit anybody from Occupy to help her, and they didn't help her either. These people want everybody who's protesting and Occupy dead. Why it is, we can only try to figure it out. There's obviously something wrong with the people in the police department psychologically, but to let them loose on people like dogs is astounding to me. The other question I wanted to ask you was, and this is why the police feel, I think, that they can get away with it. It's a question, sort of a statement. I think one of the reasons why the police feel that they, and rightly so, that they didn't get away with anything is because they keep the press away. In other words, they don't let people photograph this from any sort of larger media, or they don't let anybody interview anybody. They just keep the press away from covering this. Well, that's the easiest way to get away with murder, you know.
Yes, absolutely. I think they have come to the conclusion that at any cost whatsoever, by all means necessary, they are going to keep cameras at bay. And if that means breaking up cameras, journalist cameras, if that means illegally arresting journalists, and you know, as an African myself, what is great to not so much great. I don't know if that's the word, but what is amazing to witness is, what is coming to light is the reality that we have a police force that is really very unreasonable, irrational, law-breaking. So When you see actions like what they've been doing to Occupy, to when they cover up, which seems to be clearly an apparent cover up in the case of Trayvon Martin, in the case of Ramali Graham, who was attacked, who was murdered in the Bronx, in the case of Jatik Reed, who was beaten up by police again in the Bronx, it just brings to light because the public was never quite clear whether indeed there were reasons that people get brutalized. And what is happening now is really that the police is really showing, they're really showing their true lack of respect, lack of courtesy, lack of professionalism in everything that they do. And it is no surprise that we have as many murders by police as we see happening. It is no surprise that we see the police brutalizing absolutely everybody. And, of course, in particular, communities of color have been living under this brutality, under this campaign of terror. With the Stop, Stop and Frisk, which is a campaign that members of the people of color community in Occupy have been pushing very hard against. And all this leads to the prison mass incarceration, the prison industrial complex, the new Jim Crow. And these are all tools of the 1%.
It's also, it seems to me, it's reflected in this all started back in the 90s, too, with the military. You know, the police sometimes reflect what goes on in the larger military. The military, the Department of Defense, and then the generals involved in all our wars since 90, since the first Iraq war and the second one and in Afghanistan, they've restricted people from covering it. You know, they don't let people cover, you know, journalists, no matter who they are, no matter how prestigious or wherever they're from. You're not allowed to cover wars anymore. So they can say and do whatever they want and get away with it. The same thing, it's reflected in police departments around the country. If they keep reporters away, then whatever they do is invisible. In other words, you can't, for instance, if you think of the civil rights movement in this country, one of the reasons why the civil rights movement was successful was, you know, aside from the fact that people put their bodies on the line, was that the whole world saw what happened. If people can't see what happens, then they don't know and then they don't care.
Absolutely, and which is why it is really important, and which is why it is a good thing that everything that has been happening at Occupy Wall Street needs to be to continue to be covered, which is why our own media teams have been putting themselves right on the line, putting their own safety on the line to make sure that this is covered. And indeed, this militarization of not just the military, but the militarization of the police and this dehumanizing aspect of the way policing and the military have been behaving towards not only our own citizens and residents of the United States, but across the globe in dehumanizing illegal wars that were fought. For example, Iraq over lies, not only over nothing, but indeed over lies, it is reflected in what's happening right here in the United States now, and which is why it is always important to stand up for inhumanity, no matter where it is happening, whether it's happening in Afghanistan or Iraq, because the bottom line is that it always makes its way home. We cannot stand by and allow it to happen, not in Iran, not in Afghanistan, not in Iraq, not in Iran, repeat Iran, not in Syria, not in the Bronx, not in Stanford, Florida, not in Brooklyn, not in East New York, nowhere. We have to stand up for it always as a collective, because it is so true what Martin Luther King said, an injustice to anyone is an injustice to us all. And indeed, when anyone is dehumanized, it is just a matter of time before that lack of humanity by the enforcer, law enforcement in this case, comes home to roost, as we are seeing now. I mean, the police have absolutely zero regard for the population of Occupy Wall Street. Like, it's young, educated, primarily white men and women. And clearly, it shows that they will target absolutely anybody. So if anyone was ever in any doubt, this is this gets to be a now.
Let me ask you a question. So some people from Occupy Wall Street have gone over to this other spot in New York called Union.
Yes.
Okay. And is that an ongoing thing, or what is happening here? Because I know the other day that the police pushed everybody out of Union Square, too.
Actually, they weren't successful in pushing everybody out. Mm-hmm. People managed to hold on to the occupation there. So the occupation there is actually still continuing. The police arrested some people and pushed some people out, but it is a big park, and I suppose it is, for whatever reason, it is more difficult to barricade or to surround. Mm-hmm. I do not doubt that there will be some sort of massive force of repression, that is, that they are going to bring down to bear upon people at Union Square, but for now, it is continuing. The bottom line is that the message of income inequity and the illegal abuses of the top 1%, primarily Wall Street banks and energy companies, we can't forget those, and a lot of the companies traded on the stock exchange, we are going to continue to bring the message of the illegal and devastating effects of the prioritizers of the top 1% companies, corporations that don't even pay taxes, that we taxpayers end up subsidizing on their taxes.
Well, let me. We're going to have to probably move on here, but I just wanted to ask you one or two other questions. As far as the movement itself is concerned, obviously it's just going to keep growing, but it won't. I don't know how it'll grow or where it'll grow, and people will find out. But without a connection to unions or other large communities, especially communities that are, treated the worst by the police and by, let's say, the corporate powers that be. If these connections aren't made, I don't know how far Occupy can get. Obviously, everybody in Occupy realizes this, why they reach out to unions and why they're in other neighborhoods, too. But, I mean, do you know of anything that's going on, let's say, that you could tell people about that Occupy Wall Street is going to do in terms of reaching out to connect with other larger segments? Because I can't see it getting too far without that.
We absolutely have outreach to unions. We have been outreaching to unions right from the beginning, and unions have been a very strong part of every major action that we've taken part in and every major campaign that we're taking part in. It is an absolute necessity, absolutely, because mm-hmm. unions are the organizations that represent the workers of this country. They're the groups where workers converge, the workers that make, that run, that keep these top 1% corporations going. And that keep the infrastructure running are in unions, and we do absolutely work very closely hand in hand with unions, and they are a vital part of our outreach. Absolutely, yes.
So, before we go, is there anything that you can tell us about any major action that's coming up that you'd like people to know about?
Well, this weekend, Saturday, May, March 24th, is the kickoff of our countdown to Earth Day, and there will be events starting at 5 p.m., and they will converge starting at Union Square, and they are going to converge at the Stag Hammarskjöld Plaza at the U.N. And this is going to be actions to highlight pollution and pollutants, and there will be more corporations being arrested and being brought to justice for their actions with pollution of the earth, of the water, of the environment. And I heard the show before I came on, actually, was talking about water, and one mm-hmm. of my mm-hmm. colleagues, Alexa Bradley, works very closely around the question of the commons and water. And, of course, there's the May Day action that is going to be one of our major spring actions, calling for a day without the 99%, just to show the country and the globe what value workers bring to the top 1%, to the world, and to all of us. So really celebrate workers, and we'll be asking workers who can to join us either by not going to work that day, and for those who have to go to work to show up after work, so it will be a day of celebration all day from early in the morning right through to after work hours, such that people who do have to work can still join us. We are asking students to join us, and we aim to show a massive show of force of the 99% outreaching to all the communities. So it is it is an action plan with the immigrant rights, immigrant workers' rights movement, the anti-incarceration movement, the stop and frisk, the and of course labor, to bring together all of the different coalitions of the 99%.
All right. Thank you very much, Karanja, for coming on. And anybody who wants to check and see what's happening, if you want to look at some live streaming of video and you want to check all the events out, and this is not just at Occupy Wall Street, but it's a kind of a central switchboard sometimes for other things in other parts of the country, just go to Occupy Wall Street and online, and you can check that out. Thank you very much. Okay, this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. We're just speaking with somebody who was down in Zuccotti Park this past Saturday night. The whole idea of Occupy, and I'm thinking about this because I've been doing this show now for quite a while, since back in the fall, and I do this often. I talk about this on Sirius XM on my other show. I have people on from various Occupy groups and across the country. There's going to be a whole lot of wheel spinning. People are going to be traveling in circles. I have to say that that what you just heard was a little bit of what the problem is. My guest is no longer on. However, I am commenting on what you just heard. If people don't really understand the necessity, I mean, you can get out and you can protest and you can do actions and you can show up places and it will have some effect. But without and I know this has been told, this has been said by a whole lot of people, but it's being said even more. As time goes on, with a diffuse, uncoordinated, unstructured group of people with with myriad objections and complaints and righteous complaints, and he just rattled off about 7 or 8 different complaints, you cannot stand outside of a corporate headquarters or assemble in a park and rattle off 5, 10, 15 different major complaints, all of them awful, which we can all agree on, the environment, which you hear Gary talk about all the time, or immigration, or the oppression of people in prison. This is not going to work. This is not going to work. The Occupy movement has a tremendous vitality by appearing out in the streets. And I'm one for saying that voting is no longer worth much at all. In fact, I think it's hardly worth anything at all, period. You know, when you look at the Democrats or the Republicans, it's all the same thing. And there's maybe a handful of people. There's something like almost 600 people in Congress between the Senate and the House of Representatives. Almost every one of them is a prostitute or a millionaire or both. And there's maybe 10 people in all of Congress that are worth the trouble. Obviously, you've got the Supreme Court, which is in the back pocket mostly of corporations. The president is nothing but an errand boy for corporations. You could just find almost anything to prove that. I had some article here where he just hired somebody from Monsanto to be somebody in charge of one of his major environmental groups, somebody from a vice president from Monsanto. So the president is he just came to town the other day. Obama came to town the other day to have lunch with Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg, who thinks that Goldman Sachs is just a wonderful corporation. This is the primary corporation that has destroyed not just our economy, but the Greek government and the Greek economy almost single-handedly. Goldman Sachs, maybe 40 or 50 or 100 of whose executives should be doing hard labor, hard time in federal prison for what they did to all the rest of us, how they stole all our money. The president comes to town to have lunch with his pal Mike Bloomberg, who is basically closer to a dictator in the city of New York now than he is the elected mayor. He bribed the city council to get a third term. We only had 2 terms here for mayor in New York. And yet, and he said originally when he was running, he said 2 terms is exactly what it should be. It's a democracy. And the people of New York overwhelmingly in a vote in New York City voted to limit a mayoralty to 2 terms. Why? For the same reason, then they vote term limits in lots of places. They don't want people to get their hooks into power so heavy that you can never get them out, and that they actually changed the whole DNA of a place, right? He went to the city council and spread enough money around and enough promises and enough campaign promises and backing around to other people, specifically to the city council president, a woman named Christine Quinn, who used to have some morals but now wants to run for mayor. He basically, I mean, I don't have evidence or video for this, but everybody understands that he made promises to her of certain sorts, maybe to back her, maybe to help her out with campaign money. And, you know, all of a sudden, she arm-twisted a bunch of people, and the city council, which is like 30, 40 people at the most, they voted in council to override the majority opinion of the city of New York and gave him a third term, gave the mayor a third term, which he bought. They estimate that he spent $100 for every vote. He spent something like $100 million running for mayor of New York and trounced his opponent, of course. He bought the mayoralty. He bought the city council. He owns the police force. It was no more than a couple of months ago he boasted that New York City has the seventh largest army in the world, his police force, which is not true. They just think they are. They think they're the seventh largest. They think they're an actual army. They think they're all special ops. Maybe some of the cops who are beating people up on the street are former veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's possible. People who have lost their way entirely, morally speaking. But so voting seems to me, and I don't want to be too cynical, but you can go ahead and vote, and I guess it's still important to vote, but not much. I mean, what is your choice? You can vote for a third-party candidate, or you can vote for one of these corporate stooges like Obama or whoever it is that the Republican clown show puts up for president. However, going out in the streets is the only thing we have left. And it's interesting to me that that's how this country started. It started by people pouring out into the streets. It didn't start, obviously, there was no vote, you know, with the British running everything and there's soldiers everywhere on the streets, like the cops are on the streets in New York, military-style cops, right, you know, with their flashbang grenades and God knows what else they've got up their sleeves in the coming next few months. So, you know, we're occupied by a foreign army. We're governed by a foreign country and a king. What could we do? We have no voice. We have no representation. You show up in the streets, in the commons in Boston, and then there was the Boston Massacre. You show up over and over again. You protest. You show up. You get angry. You print leaflets. You print bills. If people try to lock you up for it, then you, when you get out of jail, you print them all over again. Free speech, freedom of assembly. We wouldn't even have a country without that. There would not be a United States of America without free speech and freedom of assembly. They are, like, if you looked at a DNA sample, the building block of our lives is the DNA, right? Well, the building block of America's DNA is free speech and free assembly. And that is something which is suppressed brutally all the time now. People need to get out in the streets. And the Occupy movement has to stop being so vague. And when I mean vague, they have to concentrate. They have to focus more. They have to get a few grown-ups in the room. Now, I don't mean that from the old fart point of view, which is, you know, a classic point of view that I always carry around with me, almost can't even help it. But what I'm talking about is, if you look at the civil rights movement, there were people who had paid their dues, people who were in their 30s and 40s and 50s, who would come down there to help people with advice. And since nobody listens to anybody anymore about anything, and everybody is as wise and as experienced at the age of 20 or even 30 as people who are 50 or 60. It doesn't matter they lived the whole life. It doesn't matter what they knew. It doesn't matter what they studied. It doesn't matter the dues they paid on the streets with cops themselves, getting even treated even much worse, by the way, which happened to me and some other people. This is meaningless to people now. And to get out there on the streets in these Occupy movements, and I applaud it. You have to get out on the street. The street is where democracy is at now. But it's going to have to be not just hundreds of people at a demonstration, not even just thousands of people. This is choice time here. We're either going to take a road straight down to a fascist dictatorship, which you can see almost every day of the week now, or some bill that's on the president's desk that he signs that can lock you up for even thinking wrong now. And either we're going to go down that road really rapidly, because we already are. We got Homeland Security driving all over the country with their special trucks and their special buses. They're spying on everybody. They're giving money to police forces. This is not conspiracy theory. It's just clear dollars and cents. Now, you know, we've got that. If we don't do something, then that's what we're going to get. The choice really is ours, but it's not in a voting booth. It is out on the street. And I'm talking about tens of thousands of people concentrated in one place. Students on every campus, in their hundreds, even in their thousands, shutting down places that are suspect or dodgy. If you've got universities that are in bed with the Defense Department or large chemical companies are getting grants for studies from places like that, shut them down. Surround them. Without students, without massive union participation all over the place, and then later on, without people in the lower middle class and middle class joining in, but without unions, without students, this occupation movement is going nowhere. Occupy will go nowhere. And without listening to people in a sort of, what is the word that they can't stand, vertical. Without a vertical structure, they're not going to go anywhere either. There has never been, and including our own revolution, there has never been a group of people, even though they just poured out in the streets, that didn't form a structure, a pyramidal structure of some kind of leadership. Essentially, it had to be democratic, of course. But they had to have people who had the charisma or maybe more brains or more tactical ability, people who were able to write better, people who were able to organize better. And I'm sure that happens on the ground with Occupy anyhow. But this constant preoccupation with horizontal structure where there'll be no leaders. I'm telling you this is my own frustration because I want this so badly to succeed. I don't see the voting booth as a choice anymore. I think people do have to get out on the streets, and I like the Occupy movement for voicing these complaints since no one else is voicing them, right? But people are going to have to understand structure and leadership. And I'm not saying they have to work within the electorate structure. You know, I mean, obviously you want Occupy to stay away from the Democratic and the Republican Party, well, obviously, but from the Democratic Party. And even to be careful about associating with unions, which sometimes are hooked straight into the Democratic Party. Now, I'm not saying we can't try to drag the Democratic Party way over to the left where it should be, because now it's just basically part of the Republican Party as far as I'm concerned. But people have to get out in the streets. There would be no America without people pouring out on the streets. And then without choosing people to represent them, to say, yes, this person speaks for us. Without some kind of national unity, without local unity and then national unity, it's a sad fact of life, but this Occupy movement will not get any further than it is now. The only thing that's going to keep rescuing it all the time, sadly, and we're going to have to see, we saw this plenty of times, we saw it with the Civil Rights Movement, we saw it with the anti-war movement in the 60s, what will continually rescue the Occupy movement from its own faults is that the cops will hurt people. They may kill people. They don't use dogs now. They use sprays. They use sound beams. They use lights. They use spies, whatever else is, drones, you know. But they still beat people up. They still break skulls and collarbones. They still throw people on the ground and into doors. And the other night, they threw someone into a glass door and split the door. All of this is unnecessary. And the more reporters are going to get beat up, the better it is for Occupy. If reporters go down there from CNN and from Fox and from other places, and this has already happened, and from ABC News and from major websites, when they go down there to cover this, if they get their microphones taken away, if they get their recorders taken away, if they get their cameras taken away, they get their iPhones taken away, if they get hurt, if they get locked up, if they get hit by batons, that's good for the Occupy movement. And the police are out of control. When you got a guy like Bloomberg, who just the other day stopped homeless shelters in New York from receiving food from synagogues and churches, he stopped synagogues and churches, who are one of the mainstays to provide food for homeless shelters. He stopped it because he wasn't sure whether or not the food was healthy food. This is true. You think I'm making this up? This is like something from a bad novel, right? No, that's what the Bloomberg administration did the other day. He stopped synagogues and churches, and it's still in effect until it changes, right? So, you know, no day-old bagels, no day-old bread, no sugary cereals. He wants them all to be healthy, the homeless people, by starving to death. This is a man who has no sense whatsoever anymore. It's been maybe 35 years since he's been anything but a very, very rich man. He has no sense whatsoever anymore of what it's like to be a regular person in New York City. Even if you're in the middle class in New York, He treats you like you're a roach. He pays no attention to what the middle class needs either. I'm not just talking about, you know, lower classes or people who are protesting. So bottom line is people need to get out in the streets in their thousands and thousands. And the Occupy movement, and we will continue to do the show, and we're going to have more people. And we've got people lined up for the next couple of weeks, really fascinating guests and people who hopefully have landlines. Who this is another thing I think the Occupy movement is going to have to start to understand. I have traded maybe 1,000 emails with people in the various Occupy movements, individuals, people in the press, press departments, or the press committees of Occupy, and I have called them up and left messages. They have no, they have very little sense of how to communicate with other people. They need to get it together. They need to realize that this is all not just a camp out or a pajama party. Yeah, I know that they're out there for the right reason, and I applaud them for that. And I know that they've suffered a lot, and I know they've paid a lot of dues, and some of them have been really hurt and arrested by the cops. But this is not spring break. This is not a campus party. This is not a stopover between college and graduate school. This is not something you do for fun. And just ask people like who are in the civil rights movement or people who are in the anti-war movement. That was not fun. That had to do with our lives. That had to do with life and death, and much worse for the civil rights movement, of course, for all the obvious reasons. The Occupy movement has to spread to campuses. If it doesn't spread to campuses, it will die. If it doesn't spread to unions and to the lower middle class and the middle class, it will die. And part of the problem is that they have a kind of an arrogance. They have a kind of an attitude. They'll get back to you if they all vote. Now, it's also a bureaucracy. I've had this experience. I've been in the left my whole life, whether I wanted to be or not. I'm not necessarily completely a leftist. But I worked at a radio station which was as left-wing as it could possibly be without being all locked up for being communists and overthrowing the government, right? I did that for 30 years. And I've been in all sorts of organizations like this. I know what happens is that people get so carried away with splinter groups and committees, and before you could actually agree to even walk across the street, you have to have a meeting to decide which shoes to put on. Or should you walk across the middle of the street or the other side of the street? Or when you get to the other side of the street, how long should you stay there? And who should be in charge of walking across the street? And who goes first and who goes last? And what about the poor people? And what about the black people? And what about the women? And what about this group? And what about that group? Occupy is doing this now all over the place. I often get in touch with the Occupy with Occupy movements across the country, and I say, you know, I heard what happened in Tampa or Charleston or you know, in Denver or something like that. Can you get back to me so we can talk about it this Saturday or this Thursday, whatever it is the show is that I'm doing? I don't hear back from them. Or this is an email I get back. We will put it before the General Assembly after we talk to the press committee, and then we'll see if we can get in touch with you. You know what? Talk about the 99%. 99% of the American public is looking at the Occupy movement right now, and they want to be connected with the Occupy movement. But the Occupy movement is so busy in its little encampment, in its little circular group where they have meetings, and they're so carried away by the sheer liberation and democracy of it, and good for them, that they're not getting it together, that there's a whole world of people outside the Occupy movement that want to be brought in, that want to be communicated with. And that even includes people like me who have been featuring these people and talking about it since almost the beginning in last fall. They're going to have a meeting. They may get back to me. Maybe they don't get back to me. Often they don't get back at all. If this doesn't change, if they don't get it together and understand that they have to be very clear and focused and very communicative to people who are outside their own community, they will wither away and die because people won't take them seriously. Now, on the other side, of course, is they are whatever they do, and they often do things that are very apropos and very focused and very powerful, and then these demonstrations happen and there's police brutality. The major media has decided that they don't exist anymore. Not this show. We'll keep, you know, showing you that they exist. But the major media has decided that that was a footnote in history that happened last fall, doesn't exist anymore. Well, we're going to find out to the contrary a lot, and it's starting right now. And we're going to see this, especially if it hits campuses. And the cops will treat kids on campus the same way, as you saw what they did with UC Davis. when they pepper sprayed those kids. And the unions have to get involved. And people like they did in Madison, Wisconsin, government employees, unions, people are being shafted by the 1% of people who do actually own and run this country. This is going to have to happen. So I think what we're going to do now is take a slight break, and then we're going to come right back, and I'm going to read you one or two little articles, which I thought were interesting. Okay, once again, this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. We're on every Thursday. We're on every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, it's available on podcast. Get involved with this show and get involved with the Occupy movement. Now, as I've mentioned many times before, I am not, after having made these passionate speeches about getting out on the street, I am not going to be doing that. I mean, with various I've reached a certain age, and I have various health situations where I am not going to be going out and put myself on the line. When I was able to, I did, and paid the appropriate bills for it. But it's up to younger generations every time to go out and do this. Now, we have a whole lot of people who have decided that's a good thing for them to do when they're young, to go over to other countries and murder people and put on a uniform and shoot whoever they're told to shoot. That's one group of young people. There's always those people. In the 60s, people were drafted. They had no choice. There really wouldn't be a war in Vietnam. There wouldn't have been a war in Vietnam, and there wouldn't have been millions of people killed, maimed, wounded, and an entire country practically destroyed and people's lives ruined forever if people were asked to choose whether they wanted to go over there. They drafted people into the Army, or they locked people up. They didn't go in the Army, or people had to run away to another place, to Canada or whatever. There wouldn't have been any Vietnam without this. But we have a new America now. We are all trained to be robots, to be loyal, to be thoughtless, you know, to be fools. And we're brought up on movies and televisions and video games where violence is so matter of fact, where there's gore and guns going off and blood and everything everywhere, that it doesn't even make a dent in us anymore. And then they send us over to some place. They send kids over. You know what? There's no jobs for anybody. You get out of college. You get out of high school. There's no job. What do you do? Work for $7 or $8 an hour in some mill somewhere or some factory? Why not join the Army and see the world? You know, you can. You'll be considered a big hero. You might get a career. They'll pay for college later on, which they will. You know, and then you get to kill people. Americans have always liked to kill people. So there's that group of young people that has always fueled the military. But then there's the rest of the young people in the country. And once upon a time, it's true, once upon a time, that people who were young in this country thought that it was immoral to go all over the world shooting people. Now, apparently, a lot of people either don't care or they don't see it. And the main thing is the draft. It was a stroke of evil genius on the part of Nixon and his compatriots to institute a volunteer army after they saw what happened in Vietnam. They knew that never again after Vietnam would Americans send their children, would Americans who were over the age of 18, who were draftable with any sense, who weren't literally retarded, would never join the army to go over to some foreign country and just murder people just because somebody like Dick Cheney told them to do it, or George Bush. A couple of criminals who'd be talking about doing hard time in jail. I mean, nobody's going to do that. So what they did is instituted a volunteer army. And now somehow it's worked out that that we love our soldiers, that they are, you know, the president. You've got President Obama standing up at the State of the Union. And just the other day, he celebrated the anniversary of the 80th year in Afghanistan or whatever it was. And he went on. It was so disgusting and so flag-wrapped, such treacle, such garbage. He went on talking about our brave men and women and the mission we have accomplished over there and what America stands for. Of course, the reason he does this is because he's running for re-election. Anything that comes out of that man's mouth has to do with his re-election. Talk about Mitt Romney has the moral compass of Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King compared to Obama. Obama will literally say and do anything to get people to vote for him. That's all he really knows how to do, is to get people to vote for him. When it comes to being president, he's a total failure and worse. So this group that went over to Zuccotti Park the other night, you know, that maybe started off this Occupy Spring and the police brutality, moved over to another place in New York called Union Square, right? And the cops came over there, hundreds of cops, as many as there were protesters, and pushed them and shoved them and hit them with batons in their stomachs and hit them in collarbones with their batons, big cops, right? With their military-style uniforms and their armor on and their visors, smacking these people all over the place who were nonviolent. And this was in Union Square the other day, and they pushed them out of Union Square. Some of them trickled back, but they pushed these protesters who were protesting all the evils, the real evils of this country, money and politics, pollution, everything else that they complain about. They pushed them out of the park. They look at them like they're going to kill them. They lock them up. They make them take biometric scans of their irises, all kinds of insane crap, right? Well, the other day in Union Square, at the same time that this was going on, thousands and thousands of people, far more than the people who were at Occupy Wall Street, turned out in Union Square to get books signed at a Barnes & Noble bookstore in Union Square for a movie called The Hunger Games, which I think is either out now or it's coming out. And The Hunger Games is from a novel or a series of novels that were written about a time in the future, or it could be now, where corporations run the government or whatever, and children have to fight on national television. They have to fight and kill each other to see who wins. You know, this is a natural extension of all these reality shows. And thousands of people showed up at Union Square. Mostly teenage girls and girls about 18 years old. But there were some grown people, if you could call them that, chronologically grown anyhow. And there were thousands of people lined up around the block, you know, 10 across and 10 deep. And the police weren't anywhere near this, right? There was one or two cops keeping them from stepping into the street to get run over. At the same time that the Occupy people were being pushed out and shoved at and cursed and arrested, these people are standing there. And it says here, fans began lining up for the event, which is a book signing, a strictly enforced Hunger Games book signing, only two items apiece. So the stars of this movie were going to sign books, right? And, you know, they stood there and they're going to get two books apiece signed. A few dozen, listen to this now, camped out overnight on 17th Street, complete with tents, inflatable mattresses on the sidewalk right in Union Square. Okay? Right in Union Square, they're camped out. Did they get beat up? Did they get arrested? Did they get shoved around? Did they get pushed around? No. Why would they? Because they're the sheep that eat the grass that they get fed by the corporate masters that run this place. Because of this manipulated movie, this isn't even a movie. This is basically a kind of an IV that was stuck into the social media of these teenagers starting almost a year ago with these novels, right? They have been drumming this up, the brain trust, the media brain trust of this movie company and this book company that stirred this up, used the social media to drum up all this fake sort of astroturf excitement among a bunch of brainless teenagers, i.e. most Americans, to stand outside of Barnes & Noble's and their thousands to get a book signed. And there's people screaming and yelling. The book is set, these are the books, books in the film, set in a dystopian future where despotic government forces, where a despotic government forces children to kill other children in a televised competition. Sounds like what we're seeing right now. And some of the fans there got doctor's notes to stay out of school. Others made excuses to parents and teachers like, I told my professor what I was doing, she said, and he said, oh, that's really great. You go ahead and do that. Go ahead and do it. I think that's a great thing. So all of these kids are jumping up and down and screaming to buy a book about some movie that they haven't even seen yet. And they're all drummed up into this fake, feverish, brainless excitement by basically modern madmen, right? And meanwhile, no more than 100 feet, 200, 300, 400 feet away from them, people who are their own age, who actually see what's going on in the world and how these people are nothing but sheep and, you know, obedient jerks to buy all this stuff. They're out there, and the cops aren't bothering them at all. So in other words, the bottom line is, if you want to buy the crap they're selling you, if you want to watch the movies and play the games and buy the books and you want to buy the, you know, the appliances and you want to buy the junk and take the vacations and go on the tours and use the products that they want you to buy, they're very happy. They're not going to touch you. If you say there's something wrong with it, if you don't like their manipulation of government, then they're going to beat you up and they're going to arrest you. And the only way that's ever going to change is if tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions of Americans finally get it through their thick, over-amused skulls that they got to get out in the street and do the right thing. Eric Fromm, who's a famous psychologist, once had this to say: human history began with an act of disobedience. He's referring to Adam and Eve. Human history began with an act of disobedience, and it is not unlikely that it will be terminated by an act of obedience. You go along, you be a sheep, you buy the stuff, you jump up and down and scream, you play the games. Meanwhile, people will get the crap beat out of them and locked up, and you can go along and you'll wind up in an Orwellian dictatorship. And we're well on our way to doing it. It's the choice is up to you.